Okay, anybody wants to listen to my talk? Do you want to sit down and kind of point this way? If you don't, that's fine also. My name's Andy Stanford Clark. I have a house that twitters. Some of you may have heard of it on TV, radio, press. It's been a bit popular this year, I don't know why. People seem to keep... The news story keeps going round and round and round. And I get lots of people asking me in lots of emails, how does it actually work? Because the headline, the house that twitters, is all quite cool, but you know, what's behind the scenes? So I said, all will be revealed at Og Camp. So I know that most of you are here because of that. And take a look behind the curtain at the house that twitters. So I've got a pretty sophisticated home automation system, monitoring how much power the house uses, the water, all kinds of ambient devices, lots of cool stuff. And the house is bristling with sensors, monitoring things like if the windows are open, if somebody treads in a particular room, ambient environment, just all kinds of stuff. And so what I'm going to do is explain how some of that stuff works and how it all links together and how we get to a position where anything in the house can start to twitter. So first of all, a computer science lesson. So publish and subscribe messaging. It's all about PubSub. Okay. So anybody heard of PubSub? Few of you? Yeah, okay. So with PubSub, you have a message broker, and you have publishers that produce information, and you have subscribers that consume information. Okay, so the publishers send data into the message broker, and the subscribers get data from the message broker. So there's no direct connection from one to the other, kind of decoupled. And with PubSub, each message has a topic, and that's a bit like the subject line of an email. Email. It tells you what the message is about. So the subscribers tell the broker what kind of stuff they're interested in. Which means that you don't, if you add new applications over here, you don't have to go back to the sensors and say, oh, we need to add this, this, and this, so it can talk to this and this. As long as they're publishing stuff to the broker, new subscribers can come in and say, pick stuff out of the topic space to do whatever that particular application wants to do. And some cool technology that we use for this is a thing called RSMB, Really Small Message Broker, which is on the IBM AlphaWorks website, and some technology, the messaging protocol called MQTT, which is on mqtt.org, which is an open protocol for publish and subscribe messaging. There's one other application that fits into this model, and that's the subscribe process publish model. So it's an application that's both a subscriber and a publisher. So it receives some data, adds value to it, and then publishes it back in on a sort of higher order topic. So you may have seen the triangle that's data, information, knowledge, wisdom. It's a triangle, the DIKW triangle, somebody called it. So what we're essentially doing is receiving raw data and then adding value to it, transforming it, aggregating it, averaging it, changing the format as it moves up that value stack, so it's then available to other applications that want to make use of it. So everything from now on you're going to hear is all to do with PubSub. And what I'll do is I'll refer back to that architecture diagram and see how the infrastructure of the house kind of builds up. So first of all, power monitoring. So about 5 years ago now, about 2004, I built a one-of-a-kind Andy special energy monitoring solution, which is a current clamp, an embedded controller, and then it's connected over Ethernet into the messaging hub. And that allows me to monitor the whole house, how much power the house is using. And that publishes live to the internet, and you can go and see this. I'm actually getting quite good at reading this graph. So that's the shower, that's the kettle, this is the dishwasher. Each individual appliance has its own unique profile, so you can sort of monitor and see what's going on. The ups and downs here, the castellations, that's the fridge and the freezer kicking on and off. And an interesting part is that the gap between the x-axis and the bottom of the red. That's the base load. That's the stuff that's always on, even in the dead of night when we're asleep. And for the UK, that's approximately £1 per watt per year. So if you're running 50 watts, that's 50 quid a year that's costing you. So if you're running a server farm, for example, at 300 or 400 watts, that's 300 or 400 quid a year that's just being burned just right there. Now, I can't expect my family to be all geeky and look at graphs like I do, so I built them this ambient orb. It's a glass sphere, about sort of so big, packed full of red, green, and blue LEDs that I can control in any combination over a serial connection that plugs into the hub. So it subscribes to the energy topics in this case, so it goes green when it's at a low level, then amber, then it goes up through shades of red and flashes when it's really high when you're in the shower and running the kettle and running the tumble dryer all at the same time. So the way this plugs into the network is that we've got the current monitor connected over TCP/IP, publishes MQTT into the message broker, and then various downstream subscriber applications drive the orb through serial, the graphing system through an HTTP connection to the internet, and a little Pico LCD display that has a USB connection directly into the hub. Now, the yellow box there, that's the home hub, and those of you who are wondering about the MPCL, that is run by an MPCL, a Viglin box in my house, so with lots of USB hubs and serial connections hanging out of it. Now, the Viglin MPC, just so you whet your appetite to buy some more raffle tickets, half a gig of RAM, 80 gig hard drive, comes pre-installed with Ubuntu. It's a 400 megahertz Geode processor. It's got a VGA output, and it's superb for running a home automation system, because although it's not particularly good on graphics performance, as a headless box, absolutely magnificent. This runs 30 or 40 applications, runs the entire house day in, day out. And they only cost £80 if you get the special deal that's on the Ubuntu UK podcast. Woo! Season 1, episode 11, Blowing in the Wind. They're still honouring that. You can get it for £80. £150 if you buy it off the Vigilant website, and free if you get it on the raffle. Anyway, so that's how it all works. It's all running off the Vigilant hub. So a couple of years ago, it suddenly became, I think there was a spike in the energy price, and it suddenly became really trendy to monitor your energy and drive down costs and have a green conscience and all sort of stuff. I'm not belittling it, and to kind of be environmentally friendly and so on. So a lot of people came to me and said, how do we monitor our energy like you do? And, well, mine was a bit of a sort of Andy special one of a kind, so I was thinking, well, it's going to be a bit tricky to sort of tell people how to do this. Fortunately, you know, the world had moved on, and there's some commercial products available. This is one, some good friends of ours called Current Cost. They have a product which has a current clamp like one I had, a bit cheaper, a transmitter, and then it goes to a base unit. This is the Current Cost O2 model, and it displays in real time how much power you're using, how much it's costing you. And the cool thing is about this, it has a serial port on the bottom, and it spits out XML, which you can then plug into a computer, parse it with a little Perl script that then publishes MQTT to a message broker on the internet, and you can do all the cool, funky graphing stuff. Now, remember the thing about the £1 per watt per year. If you run a desktop server just to monitor how much power the house is using, the answer is £200 or £300 more than it was before. So probably not a good idea to do that. So we fell in love with these little low-powered embedded Linux boxes. This is the Linksys NSLU2, affectionately known as the Slug, which you can either unsling to a form of Linux or stick real Debian onto. And of course, there's the Vigilant MPCL. So about 50 of my colleagues have bought that combination of hardware and run the bit of software. So we've got comparative graphs and this sort of geeky community around them on the web. Hiya, question.
How much does the Vigilant consume?
Ah, good question. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah. So the Vigilant uses 10 watts of power, and the Slug on its own uses 4 watts of power, but it doesn't have a hard drive. So by the time you've plugged in a hard drive, that's another 6. That's 10 as well. So it's 10 watts, basically. So, yep. You have to program it in the settings, which you go into by holding one of these buttons down. You say how many P per unit, and I think the default is 12 or 13 P. You just have to put in whatever yours is. 12 or 13 P is not a bad guess. I normally use 10 P as a guess, which is where I got to the £1 per watt per year thing. But yeah, you just program it in. Now, so that's the CCO2. More recently, Current Cost came out with a new model called the Envy, and their tagline is, you can now go green with Envy. Woo! And the cool thing about this, apart from the sexually attractive case, is... I think lickable was the word I heard at one point, is that it actually contains 10 of those inside it. So not only can you monitor the power of the house, but you can also have 10 other or 9 other sensors around the place monitoring other stuff. So you can now do sub-metering. So needless to say, I went a bit wild with this, and I've put clamps around all the red wires I could find. You have to put it around places where the red and the black wires are separate, because if you have live and neutral going through the same clamp, they cancel each other out and you get zero. So, kind of obviously. Well, maybe not be. Anyway, so I've got a whole lot of channels of data which are being brought in through the CC128, the Envy meter, and that allows me to do things like the power pie, which is the whole house power consumption, and then the things I can break out, like the shower and the floor, underfloor heating and the kitchen and the base load, all sorts of stuff. So I can see what's a worthy target for going after. And the kitchen lights actually turned out to be one that's taking 9% of my energy, which I, from another bit of this graph, I can tell is £73 a year. I've just taken the decision to go to LED lighting, and a complicated equation I won't explain here. It's going to pay for itself within 2 years and then give me 18 years of pure profit, so well worth doing. And that was purely from the analysis I did from this. So some other sensors then. I'm quite a keen electronics hacker, and for things like the window sensor, which tells me if the windows are open or closed, I've built a little Motorola PIC-based system, and I've built a whole load of these different things. They're very easy to use. There's a thing called pickaxe.co.uk. Basically, you can program these chips in BASIC, and because it's a PIC, a programmable interface control, you can basically tell the legs of the chip what to do. And they're really cheap, and the cool thing is you can program them in place. That's actually the serial connector that goes to the PC, so you can blow new code into this in circuit, in situ, and then it reboots and comes back with the new functionality, which is great, because you don't need an EEPROM burner or any of that crap, and it'll keep pinging the legs out. Oh, man. And it's luxury. So this one's got a serial port for doing cool stuff with, an LED. And for connectivity, I've been using these 433 megahertz Easy radios. Now, these are from LPRS, lowpowerradiosolutions.co.uk. They are exactly what they say on the tin, easy radio. You give it some data, and it arrives at the other end, or it doesn't arrive. It's like a UDP packet. It either arrives intact, or it doesn't arrive at all. So basically, you put in some data, and it comes out the other end. Extremely reliable. They just work. So at the other end of this connection, there's a receiver, which is plugged into serial, so rather like that, plugs into the PC, plugs into a little Perl application running on the Viglin called PS232, so PubSub232, which basically takes anything that comes in on serial and publishes it into the message broker, so you can then make use of this incoming data. So that's one of the forms of sensors. Another form, I was playing around with the, as you do, with the current cost transmitter one weekend, and it occurred to me that the current clamp thing is really an analog input. So I thought, well, maybe if you stick some other volts into there, I wonder if it'll measure that. So I got a solar panel and plugged that into the place where the current clamp went, and it turns out that becomes a light level meter. So as the brighter it gets, the more watts show up on one of the channels of the current cost meter. So you've now got a direct proportional, you know, a light level reading. And this is actually how I measure the kitchen lights. Remember the previous one with the in the power pie? Because I can't get at the wires of the kitchen lights because they're all channeled into the wall, but I've got this little sensor in the kitchen. So when it goes above a certain threshold, I know the kitchen lights are on. So then I add 320 watts, which is the product of the spotlight, into the mix for that period of time, and that then shows up in the power pie. I tried some other things as well. Stuck a thermistor onto it, so I've now got a temperature sensor, which I calibrated for degrees C, which is quite nice. And by adding a bias resistor, I was able to make it a digital input as well, so I could replace this with a current cost input. So now you've got a really interesting possibility that you don't need to do all this funky ad hoc stuff. You can actually use a sort of an off-the-shelf platform, if only, you know, it was kind of suitable, had the right input. So I went to talk to Current Cost, and just for grins, they came up with this little dev... Ooh. I came up with this little dev board, which is, these are two AAA batteries, so it's really small. And it's basically the contents of one of these Current Cost transmitters, and it's got a digital and two analog inputs, and it transmits whatever it's getting. So suddenly, I was able to replace all this stuff with these little Current Cost things. So now the picture becomes, we've got the Current Cost catcher on the Viglin, we've got the Current Cost meter there, we've got the 433 megahertz proprietary Current Cost protocol going from these little sensors and from the various current clamps into here, and then a couple of applications which parse out that XML and do the accumulated metering. So each different topic that comes in, it runs a meter, which is how we do the power pie. Now, all the downstream applications have absolutely no idea that this has changed from the funky Andy SC special that we had before. So that's the beauty, again, of PubSub, is that, you know, as long as the formats are the same, the downstream applications don't change. So I was able to just plug in a new front end, and all the back end stuff stayed the same. Onto the water meter. Now, you shouldn't mix water and electricity, but on separate slides, that's okay. So my house has a very upmarket water meter. It's got a tiny little magnet on the end of the litre hand. So once per litre, the magnet goes past a fixed point. So by sticking on a reed relay, that then goes into a little PIC detector that I built, which then uses 433 megahertz easy radio to transmit into the hub, which then goes to a little application which receives that data and publishes back in the accumulated value and a sort of cumulative graph that builds up each day. So we've got sort of washing and stuff in the morning, then nothing during the day, then washing, cooking, cleaning, so on in the afternoon. So the original one didn't have a magnet in it, and I phoned up Southern... This is a good story, actually. So I phoned up Southern Water and said... Because I live on the Isle of Wight, and everyone on the Isle of Wight's got a water meter, because we were the South of England water metering pilot 15 years ago, so we've all got a water meter. But I couldn't... You know, I went around it with a thing. I couldn't find a magnetic output anywhere, because they're supposed to have one. So I phoned up and said, look, I want to measure my water meter with my computer. Any chance of upgrading my water meter to one that I can read with my computer? They said, yeah, sure, no problem. We'll come tomorrow. I said, no, you clearly didn't understand my question. I said, look, I'm a computer geek. I want to make my water meter readable by... Yeah, no problem. We'll come tomorrow. I said, all right, we'll see what turns up. Anyway, they turned up, replaced the water meter with one that's got this little magnet on it, and then went away. And I said, why was that so easy? And they said, well, it's been in for 15 years. They're horribly out of spec, you know, completely out of calibration. Any excuse to replace one, we'd love to come and do it. So anyone who asks any silly question like that, we'll come and do it. So there we go. So we've now got a computer-readable water meter. Now, this has never been shown on British television before. I'm now going to open up that box and show you what's inside it. Bing. Right, so we have a power brick, which gives me 5 volts, and... Save you craning your head round. Here's the clever bit. It's another of these PIC micros. There's a serial port. Another easy radio. And what it does, it counts the pulses. So every time it gets a pulse, it increments a counter. So it might go 1, 2, 3. Maybe we miss 1, 6. A couple. And so basically, the software says, oh, it must have jumped from 4 to 6. So we must have missed out 5. That's fair enough. as long as you don't miss out 255 when the counter wraps, you can catch up. And if it gets to 255, believe me, there's probably something more wrong than just the odd missed message. So, and I've looked through the logs, it's extremely reliable. There's been some downtime where various things have gone wrong, like the sensor's fallen off or the thing's got unplugged or something. But in general, it catches all the pulses. So that's the water meter. Oh, I love that VGA. Okay, so that was monitoring. Now, I also control some appliances in the house. There's a system called X10, which has been around for ages, and it's quite clever. It sends the data through the power line, so it's a power line carrier PLC system. So basically, you plug one of these little controllers into a socket somewhere near your computer, and plug that into the serial connector, and then it sends the signal, the control signals, around the wiring of your house to various switches and adapters that turn various things on and off. And I've built a bridge from MQTT to X10, so that sits on the Viglum plugged into the controller. So any message I can now send into the messaging system can now turn things on and off. So I can, for example, control things from the web or from my phone, or I've got this little wireless clicker thing here that it's a garage, like a car remote thing, and that controls this little box here. It makes a relay open and close. That's detected by a little embedded controller that publishes a message saying Plipper 1 or Plipper 0. Yeah?
What's the range of the X10? Could your next door neighbour control your stuff?
It generally doesn't go backwards through the consumer unit.
All right, so yeah.
And it doesn't actually reach the whole length of the house either, but you can put repeaters and stuff in, but it pretty much works for everything I want to do. And you can change the house code as well if you happen to clash with your neighbour and happen to be very close to them. So you can generally make it work. So this little controller here is actually very clever. It controls the fountain or the patio lights, and the fountain's on the patio. So you look out the window and click it. During the day, it controls the fountain, and during the night, it makes the lights go on off, because obviously you don't want the fountain on during the night or the lights on during the day. And it makes that look really, really clever, because people stand there, click, 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 trying to catch it out around dusk. Now, now all that's happening, of course, is that the message is being published into the message broker. An application gets that. There's a lovely little Perl module off CPAN, which allows you to find out sunset for any given latitude and longitude. It looks which side of sunset it is and does one X10 message or the other X10 message to control either the fountain or the lights. But that's totally trivial, and yet it makes it seem really sentient. Now, of course, there is an edge case of what if the fountain's on when it gets dark? What do you do when someone clicks? I'll leave that to you anyway. That's all really clear. So we link that into the system. We've got an X10 gateway here that controls this thing. So now anything in the message system can now turn things on and off. So far, so good. Around Christmas, we've got some new funky Christmas tree lights. I thought it'd be quite cool to stick them onto the system as well. So they're controlled by X10, but I thought I'd do something a bit different this time. You can now text reindeer on to my house, and the reindeer lights come on. So the way we did that was we built an SMS gateway into the system. So now we can receive and send SMS messages from the messaging system. The little application here that parses the incoming message, subscribes to the SMS inbound topic, looks for the words reindeer on, publishes in the right X10 message, which then goes to here and turns the reindeer lights on. So almost for no extra effort, although I got that from somewhere else, we can now add that into the mix. So it's very easy to add. Once you've got this basic platform in place, adding new applications to it becomes incrementally less expensive, which is why I actually do things. I'll catch you in a minute. Because if I had to get these Christmas tree lights and try and link them, control them by SMS, I'd go, oh man, that's going to be loads of work. I can't be bothered to do it, busy chap and all that. But if it's just like a half hour's work just to map it into the existing system, I might as well do it, and that's why I do all this cool stuff. Yes, Andy?
So you've got something that on Linux reads an SMS message off of a 3D dongle?
Yeah. Okay. It's just AT commands. It's just a bit of Perl. What can't you do in 50 lines of Perl? Sure, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's really easy. Now, if you didn't think I was mad already, this will convince you. This is my electronic mousetrap system. So up in the, I live out in the middle of nowhere, and we get lots of trouble with mice in the winter. And you'll head in to hibernate. So I thought an electronic monitoring system for the mousetraps would be really good, because mousetraps 101, once a mousetrap's gone off, it doesn't catch any more mice. You have to reset it before it catches any more mice. That may sound obvious, but it wasn't obvious. Yeah, well, anyway. So we thought, what better example of a monitoring system than this? So we've got a little closed-loop system here. A little electrical signal goes through the base of the mousetrap, through there, out through the red crocodile clip, and back into the monitoring system. When the mousetrap goes off, it breaks the circuit. That gets detected within 100 milliseconds by this little box. It publishes an MQTT message called a mouse event. Now, that's the best round of geeky laughter I've had for a long time. I did expect that. And that then publishes a message to the internet. I've got a little Java midlet that runs on my mobile, which is an MQTT subscriber, so it gets data from the internet. And this little smiley mouse here saying ready for action turns into a picture of a gravestone. and it says mousetrap over your bedroom's gone off, and the green indicator lights on the dashboard, which is another Java applet, runs on the web page, they turn red, so you know which ones to go and reset. That's been in production for about 5 or 6 years now. It's caught dozens and dozens and dozens of mice. Really, really effective. Now, that can be replaced by this little current cost thing that I mentioned earlier. So it's got the digital input, and I actually did a demo for current cost where I did the current cost mousetrap. So all this expensive infrastructure that I've got to do it can now be replaced by very cheap, and actually wireless as well, so you can put these down anywhere, not just where you can get wire and Ethernet and all that sort of stuff too. So you can stick these things all over the house, in under cupboards and under the bed and stuff, and haven't got to worry about running Ethernet out to the mousetraps. Why that would bother any of us, I have no idea, but my wife has a little different opinion on that one. Right, Twitter. Now, I normally say at this point, now, who's heard of Twitter? I get a little smattering of show of hands, but I know that's a completely pointless question to ask here. So, Twitter. I've been using it for about 2 years now, and I became interested in objects that Twitter, which I christened Tweetjects, which I apologise slightly for, but it seems an appropriate name, because it contrasts with Blogjects, which are objects that blog, which we've done before. So the idea is that you have objects that Twitter. Now, the first Tweetjet that came to my notice was the Botanicals houseplant. It's a little Arduino-based system. You could win an Arduino today on the raffle. It's got two little sensors in here which monitors how moist the soil is, and then it has an internet connection, so it twitters, please water me, urgent water me now, thank you for watering me. And basically mixed in with your Twitter stream of all your friends are your friendly houseplants, so they can alert you when they need to be watered. So that kind of got me thinking, could have some fun here. So... Now, I measure my hacks in terms of ferry journey. I get half an hour on the ferry each day. You can write a fair bit of code in half an hour. So one ferry journey hack was an MQTT to Twitter gateway. So now anything that talks to MQTT can Twitter. So I went home, plugged that into the system, onto the Viglin, and now suddenly, without having to Twitter enable each individual thing, everything that's using this messaging system can now Twitter. So now we have power consumption, water usage, inbound phone calls from catching the caller ID off a modem, and then running it through a directory to see if it's someone I know. So I get a Twitter message saying the phone is ringing. I get a DM saying Jim's ringing you or whatever, so I can decide whether to call them back or not. Security notifications on windows and doors. Oh, there's little sensors on them, lights on and off, other X10 events, and environmental stuff like temperature and humidity moving outside certain ranges. So you can go to twitter.com/andy_house. It's actually a closed account. It's a private account, so you have to ask to join. But you can look at things like it tweets every £5 worth of electricity, £25 worth used, £30 used, the phone is ringing, the fountain's turned off, electricity meter reading. All this stuff's just mixed in with my Twitter streams. I get this sort of ambient background awareness of what's happening at the house without having to go and explicitly go and look at it. And anything it needs to tell me, it Twitters, it DMs me, so I can, if something bad's happening, like the end came off the hose pipe and it was leaking hundreds of litres of water, I got 3 SMSs in a row saying, you've used lots of water today. And I phoned my wife and discovered that the hose had broken. So we're able to save some water. That's cool. This spawned a whole load of Me Too houses, which are fair enough. And they monitor different things. And although one of them, this is a good example of how not to do it. It twitters, temperature is 21 degrees, temperature 22 degrees, temperature 23 degrees, 22 degrees. That's really boring. I wouldn't follow that for more than half an hour. This guy, he must have driven a more busy street than me. His doorbell twitters when it gets rung, and it keeps ringing all the time. God knows what's going on. And this guy publishes all. This guy publishes all the information about highs and lows and maximum of his power usage. Now, what this has led to is some thoughts about the privacy and the security aspects of this stuff. Because if there's stuff going out on the web, for example, if I go away on holiday, then this activity suddenly changes. It may pretty much flatline or change, and the graphs and everything settle down. So what we've done is we've written an application that essentially it captures a week of normal usage, so you can hit the replay button when you go away on holiday, and it replays a week of plausible data on top of the power graphs and the water graphs and the Twitter stream, so it looks like you're in, when in fact the house is pretty much dormant because you're out. So playing with a lot of this technology has allowed us to get those kind of questions and try things out before it's actually caused a problem. How do we do time? So I was going to talk about one more thing. That's the house that twitters. I just wanted to cover one more thing. This is, as I live on the Isle of Wight and go to work on the Red Jet, which is the ferry that goes from West Cowes to Southampton, I've also got the ferry's twittering. And this was also on the news a couple of weeks ago. Now, Red Funnel, who's the company that runs the ferries, notoriously bad. I did actually have the word pathetic here, but I thought I'd change it before, just in case anybody saw it afterwards. They have this recorded announcement. They're terrible at telling the customers those mere inconveniences that get on and off the ferries. If the ferries are ringing off, it might be a stormy night or foggy or something, and you show up at the ferry port, and you don't know if the ferries are ringing off. Like, staff don't even seem to know. Anyway, they have this recorded announcement you can phone up, and you ring it up, like, first thing in the morning, before you head off to the ferry place, and it says, oh, the ferries are all running on time. It turns out that the guy who records that announcement doesn't show up till 9 o'clock. So before that, it's saying the same as it did, i.e. everything's running fine, at 5 o'clock the night before when he went away. So that's completely useless. So standing there fuming one morning when there were no ferries, I think, oh, wouldn't it be good if the red jets could just Twitter when they were delayed? That would be really cool. But we need some data. So I went Googling around, sat in my car with my 3G dongle and tried to find some data. And it turns out that all the boats, all big boats worth their salt, have a thing called AIS, Automated Identification System. This is essentially it's a transponder that the boats have, which is a GPS receiver, so it knows where it is, and a radio transmitter, so it basically beacons out the name of the boat and the coordinates and the speed and direction and stuff like that. And for a limited radius, you can pick up that radio signal and decode it and find out about the boats. Now, there's an application called Ship Plotter, which is a community-based thing where loads of people who are community-spirited-minded have a radio and a PC plugged together all over the place, receiving their little area of transmission and putting it into this central database. So you can then go to the ship plotter place and get a geo-rectangle of any particular bit of the map you want and find out all the boats have been contributed by anybody into there. And it updates every 90 seconds. So that's pretty cool. So behind this is an XML page. And I pull that XML page and strip out all the names of the ferries, because I know there's Redjet 3, Redjet 4, all the different names. And then I use a technique called geofencing, where you basically draw a little circle around each of the ferry ports. And then when the ferry enters or leaves that geocircle, we decide whether it's arriving or leaving, and then generate a Twitter message. So each of the ferry routes has its own Twitter page. And this is an open page, it's an open account, so you can just pull this up on your browser, twitter.com/redjets, and it just says, you know, Redjet 3 is leaving Cowes, Redjet 4 has arrived at Southampton. And it just does that all day. It's really tedious. You don't really want to follow this. You just want to pull that page up and read it. And indeed, if you're running down the road a little bit late, probably going to miss it, and you pull your phone up, it's running 5 minutes late. I'll carry on running then. All these people walking past going, ha, he's never going to catch it. And you're the last person on. Man, that is just, that's a moment to live for. That made it all worthwhile. So I did this for all the other ferry links as well. There's a vehicle ferry, then there's White Link that runs the other service. So they're all twittering away as well. Now, at this point, none of the ferry companies actually knew I was doing this. I ran it for nearly a year before anybody realised. I kept sending Redfunnel an email saying, oh, those twittering ferries are so useful, I use it every day. Who did that for you? That's really cool. Never responded. Anyway, so earlier this year, and it was April the 1st, I remember it well, I was looking up some ferry times for a friend to come and visit, and I just happened to glance at the top of the page, and it's got current live positions. Redjet 4 is leaving West Cowes. Redjet 3 is right there. I thought, ooh, that's novel. I wonder where they got that from. Moused over it, and it turns into a link. Clicked the link, and it went to my Twitter page. Aha. So what it turned out they're doing, they're actually pulling the RSS feed off Twitter, feeding it, merging it live into their web page, and declaring that as the official Redfunnel official status of their ferries. Because it was April the 1st, and because I could... For those of you at the back, Redjet 4 has arrived in Milton Keynes, April Fools. At this point, we screen captured this, blogged it, and then I phoned up Redfunnel and said, I think we need to talk. They said, oh, I think we do, yes. We had a meeting the next day. They love me to bits. They've now taken my Perl software and installed an Ubuntu machine for me and bought the middleware that sits underneath it, and it's now running live in their data center, and they bought their own AIS radio, so it's all kind of official and kosher now. We had fun with that. So the way it works is that the AIS transponders come in, it gets hits the AIS receiver in Redfunnel, it goes in to the Perl 23, PS232 stuff, goes through the AIS decoder, runs the ferry tracker, which then does the geofencing, and then goes out through the Twitter gateway, same bit of code that's running at my house, and then publishes it to Twitter over the HTTP gateway, and you then get your message on the SMS or on the web page. And then the slight inefficiency here is they then pull the RSS feed back into their web server and put it as the live status on their thing. Obviously, we could short-circuit that by directly feeding the web server from the messaging system, but I think that's future to be done. So, anyway, that's some cool stuff with twittering houses and twittering ferries and stuff. I hope you've enjoyed that. Now take any questions.
Yes.
Question over there. How long did it take me to do it all? Well, it's been a hobby for about the last 5 years. In terms of actual time to do any of these things, really very little time. It doesn't take very long at all. Because of this, I've got this messaging middleware stuff in place, the incremental cost of adding a new application to it is either hacking a bit of Perl to make a new cool subscriber to pull data in from the topic tree that's already there, or to map a new sensor in and make that part of the mix and then do something cool with it. So it's, in terms of elapsed time, not that much, but it's been a five-year labour of love hobby project. Tony, what's next? Ah, good question. I think the interest next is going to be in extending the twittering ferries to do some slightly more cool stuff. I'd like to link up some buses and trains so you get some integrated journeys. So you have a little agent that monitors your journey from home on the bus to the ferry to the train, and then maybe reschedules your meeting in London or tells you which ferry you should get, or actually, you know, direct messages you personally to say, you know, you've just missed a connection here, you should change to this platform, whatever. I think that's going to be the next bit of fun. Yeah, that'd be handy, yeah. And Redfunnel want to do some other stuff with, like, a countdown to when the next ferry arrives and mapping against the timetable so that rather than just twittering all the time, it'll only twitter when it's running, like, 5 minutes late, which then is a topic, a channel you would follow, and you get the DM messages and the SMS messages through when it's actually running late, which is what you want to know. Yes, sir? Yep.
Oh,
yep. Oh. Zap to the laser pointer. Yeah, absolutely. So so when I first started doing this, I was running 3 or 4 computers to monitor the house and manage how much power we were using. My standby current was up around 560 watts. That's 560 quid a year. Since I started monitoring it and kicked out the servers and replaced them with NPCLs and stuff like that and just turned a whole bunch of stuff off, it's now gone to 120 watts. It's actually saved me about a third of my electricity bill in a year. So it's several hundred pounds back in my pocket. So it's more than paid for the hardware. Looking about 150 quid to have, you could probably build something very similar to what I've built there for about 150 quid. Popey.
Does it require proprietary IBM software to make all that work?
Yes. to work the way that I've got it working, it does require, you don't necessarily have to buy it because there's an evaluation of the really small message broker on AlphaWorks, so it's free to be played with for non-production use. And the MQTT stuff is all open and free and public on mqtt.org. It's just the server that's currently IBM proprietary. But MQTT isn't IBM proprietary. It's free and open. And if someone wants to write an open source server for it, that would be really cool. Well, I didn't say that. Yes?
You mentioned the electricity monitoring and the price in pence per unit that you have.
Yeah.
For my own electric company at home, that changes about twice a month.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so people often say, well, we get different tariffs at night, and there's on this thing where the first so many units is a certain price, and the next so many, but it's not worth it. Just divide your electricity bill by the number of units and use that as a number. It's about 10p.
Specifically with ours, the electrical company changes the tariff. So in 1 month it can be 11p, the next one 15, the next one 12. It varies and it's completely random.
But does it move a lot?
Yeah, it can move.
Oh, okay.
About once every 2 weeks.
Oh, man. Okay, well, in that case, you'd have to go in and reprogram it, yeah. Yeah. Laura.
Going back to Poppy's question, could you use Identica instead of Twitter?
Absolutely, yes, you could use Identica instead of Twitter. I mean, the Twitter is really just a platform of putting stuff on the web in a blog-like way and sending you SMS notifications. I could have written it all by hand. I could have used any other similar sort of platform. So, yes, absolutely. Good question. Any other questions? No? Right, well, hope you enjoyed that, and thanks for listening.